We're going live on a special edition of the Locked On Giants podcast. Nick Filato of Giants Country, SB Nation, and Big Blue Banter is our special guest. We'll take your questions and we'll talk all things Giants. That's coming up next on a special live edition of the Locked On Giants podcast.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of the Locked On Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast family. Your team every day. Patricia Traynor here with you. We are coming to you live tonight. And my special guest is the lovely and talented Nick Filato, who has done an absolute bang-up job over on Giants Country writing off the draft profiles. He's also done work over at SB Nation's Big Blue View, doing film studies. The man's so busy. I'm so thankful that he's able to carve out a few minutes to sit with us tonight. We're going to talk about Giants draft. We're going to take your questions, all the stuff we do on the live program. Nick, my friend, so happy to have you with us.
Patty, thank you for having me. I'm interested and excited to get into this Giants draft class, the first in the Joe Shane era. And I would think it's safe to say, Pat, we've seen a fresher approach, I think is probably a good way to term it.
Yes, indeed. You know, the old way, the old Giants way, no longer. So this is a new sheriff in town. He's changed everything up, and I don't know how it's going to play out, Nick, but we'll certainly talk about some of these picks and what they mean, how they potentially fit in. And it's going to be an interesting discussion. And of course, along the way, those of you who are watching, if you have questions, you know what to do. Pop them into the comments box and we'll sprinkle them in as we go along tonight on this live edition of the Locked On Giants podcast. So, Nick, overall, this Giants draft class, you know, it's interesting. Joe Shane said way back when he was hired, something about having 11 picks when in fact he had 9. And then sure enough, he goes and he gets 11 picks. Isn't that kind of ironic? You know, it made me wonder if he all the while intended to get 11 picks because there's some kind of grandmaster plan for down the line.
Yes, a grandmaster plan of replenishing this roster and finding versatile players who can fit both Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka's offense, which we can get into that a little later. I'm not 100% certain what that's going to look like, and I'm fascinated to see how some of these offensive pieces can fit into whatever they want to put on the football field. And then there's Wink Martindale, which is a whole nother type of defense, middle of the field, closed man coverage. I'm going to just blitz the crap out of you type of defense. Feel like the Giants found a couple key assets in the draft to help him maximize that scheme.
Now, Nick, when we look at this Giants draft class, it was divided down the middle, but because it was an odd number, it was more defense. We'll talk about the defense in a moment, but two offensive linemen from the same school. I gotta ask you, what is it about North Carolina's offensive line that, or maybe it was just a coincidence, but what is it about that offensive line that you think drew them to these two guys?
Well, I think you have to look at Joshua Ozudu and you see his overall athletic ability. He's somebody I did not study pre-draft. And when I got into his film, I was like, wow, this guy really, a lot of people are saying that was a reach. This is not a reach. This is somebody who is really quick to climb up to the second level. Excellent, I would say, foot speed and overall hip mobility. He can really latch on with excellent grip strength, turn and seal guys away from gaps. And the way North Carolina used these guys was they could do zone, they could do all that stuff, reach blocks, scoop blocks, all that. But they would also pull them, and they would execute, you know, traditional pulls where you turn and you kind of square your shoulders to the sideline and you locate the end man on the line of scrimmage, or you can climb up to the second level. But they also did skip pulls, and I felt like both Ozudu and McKeithen did a solid job executing those assignments. I think Ozudu was much more athletic than McKeithen, but McKeithen, he's 6'7", 350 pounds. Not a lot of human beings out there built like that. So I mean, that's why there's a huge draft disparity between those two. Ozudu was picked in the third round, and I think he's somebody who had some issues in pass protection when he was going backwards sometimes, maybe a lack of confidence in his feet at times. But in terms of being a run blocker, his angles and his footwork as a run blocker, they were excellent. So I'm really excited about that. So I think they were really just, I'm wondering if there was a connection between North Carolina and the New York Giants. That possibly could be it. I also think it's safe to say that it's a good thing to bring in rookie players who are familiar with each other, specifically on the offensive line. Someone like Azudu, who knows, he could eventually play next to a player like McKeithen. I mean, the Giants have a lot of depth on the offensive line, so let's hope that doesn't necessarily happen in year one. But Azudu has tackle experience. I think he ideally fits in as a guard, a very athletic guard. McKeithen, he's more strictly a guard. But I think it's mainly just comes down to the players themselves. I think you bet on traits, you bet on size, you bet on power on day three. That's McKeithen. And in terms of Azudu, I think they really liked just his overall athletic profile and the kid himself, which was very, very important to Joe Shane and the Giants staff throughout this draft.
Indeed. Now, you know, you mentioned we don't know yet what the Giants offense and defense are going to look like this version. You know, obviously there's going to be some tweaks, but based on the clues that we have, the players that they kept, the players they added, you know, Wandale Robinson in the second round, a head scratching decision, but there's got to be a role for him. What do you think these clues are indicating for the offense and how this offense is going to look like?
So the Wandale Robinson pick is interesting. I love Wandale Robinson, the player. And when they made that selection, I was a little confused. And I think Joe Shane said it well, because their skill sets between Kadarius Toney and Wandale Robinson are a little bit similar, right? But he's like, is that a bad thing? Why is that a bad thing? You want players who can make defensive players miss in space. And that's what Wandale Robinson does. He's a lightning bolt when you get the football into his hands. And I ended up having a second round grade on Giants country on Wandale Robinson. That was also before he went to the combine and before I knew that he was like 5'8" with historically bad arm length. And he's really underweight. He's below the 180 pound threshold, which I think is pretty interesting too, Patty. The fact that Joe Shane didn't really abide by traditional threshold with Wandale Robinson and Cordell Flott, who was under 180 pounds as a cornerback, two day two picks, that he didn't abide by the thresholds with whatsoever. In terms of the offense, it's hard to say because Josh Allen was the key cog to what Brian Daboll did in 2020 and 2021 when he broke out as professional offensive coordinator. Without Josh Allen, that offense may be totally different. It might not be as 10 personnel heavy. Because if we go back to 2018 and 2019, Brian Daboll's first 2 years as the offensive coordinator in Buffalo, a lot more 12 personnel. A lot more 21 personnel, not as spread out with the young Josh Allen. So I'm interested to see how that transition between Josh Allen and Daniel Jones. Love Daniel Jones. He's not Josh Allen. I'm just interested to see how that works out. I'm expecting a lot of quick hitting passes, a lot of jet sweeps, maybe a little bit of that Liam Cohn type of feel to the offense. And that was the offensive coordinator for the Kentucky Wildcats. And he was somebody who comes from the Sean McVay tree. So I think they're just going to try to get the football quickly into the hands of the playmakers around the line of scrimmage. That's going to force safeties to come up closer to the box, less too high looks, and then they could take shots down the field and try to catch and create explosive plays once they bait defenses closer to the line of scrimmage with their quick hitting type of passes. Not necessarily quick game, but quick hitting type of passes. Simplify things for Daniel Jones a little bit and allow these playmakers to make plays in space.
All right, Tama is on the show with us here. He's watching. We had a live spaces the other day, and so I was thrilled. We had Nick, Tana, we had a bunch of people. Coach Gene was on there, Shakes, Tommy G, and I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. Whoever I'm forgetting, I'm sorry. But Tana writes, I'm hoping it's more spread out. Giants have to let Jones sling it. We got to know what we got. Nick, you say that it's going to be, you know, get the ball out of the hands quickly. So when you think of that, you think of more slant patterns, you think of almost like that West Coast offense type of, you know, philosophy, but it's probably not going to be like that, I would think, given the speed that they have. Am I right?
I think it's going to be a mixture of all things. I definitely think they're going to try to create explosive plays down the field, some deeper type of passing concepts. I don't think it's just going to be quick slants, quick game and things of that nature. But I do believe they're going to put an emphasis on getting the football into Kadarius Toney and Wandale Robinson's hands to try to make them make linebackers miss, make second level defenders miss and things like that. But that's, I don't say that's what it's going to be. That's what I anticipate. I'm actually really curious on how Saquon Barkley gets incorporated into this offense. Now, you can use him as a receiver, which is excellent. I feel like he was underutilized in that manner. But Saquon Barkley and the personnel the Giants have on offense is a lot different than what the Bills had. Saquon Barkley is a much more explosive and, I guess you could say, better type of running back than a Devin Singletary or Zach Moss. No slight on those guys. But how does Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka want to utilize that since he's more than likely going to be here in 2022? So you might see a little bit more running the football. And I'm wondering if you're going to see a little bit more 12 personnel because of that. I'm hoping, like Tana said, they do spread things out, but I'm not 100% certain if they will to the level that they did up in Buffalo, because Josh Allen is Josh Allen for a reason.
Yeah. And I was actually going to ask you about Barkley next, because, you know, we only got to see one day of the mini camp when they had the voluntary extra mini camp before the draft, and they were having Barkley split out wide. They had him in the slot. They had him motioning out of the backfield. They had him doing all kinds of things. And, you know, I was talking with somebody and they said, my God, Barkley doesn't have an explosive year stat-wise in this offense. Something's radically wrong. And these are all things, you know, like you said, we haven't really seen from him, partially because he's had some injury issues. But it just seems like this whole offense, I don't want to say it's built around Barkley, but you could kind of make a case that good chunk of it is based on, granted, that one showing.
Yeah, when you look at the Giants personnel right now, hopefully Kadarius Toney is there. Everything is going to go well there. You have Kenny Golladay coming off a historically bad season after signing a very, very lucrative contract. Your tight end position is a little bit up in the air. And you have this star running back who's entering a contract year, who's playing on his fifth-year option, who is now a year removed from coming back from the devastating knee injury that he suffered in week two of the 2020 season. Why not put as much on Saquon Barkley's plate as you can in an effort to win football games, especially if you're not going to re-sign him? And that's kind of one of the ugly things about the NFL business, but it is a business at the end of the day. And when you look at Saquon Barkley's skill set, if he is healthy, he can be dynamic. I think he's not the most well-rounded running back. I don't think he's Nick Chubb or Dalvin Cook in terms of his vision and his ability to press a line of scrimmage and see a hole and accelerate through it instantaneously. I feel like he's a little bit slower to process those things, but he's still a dynamic playmaker. So try to leverage that. If you get him matched up in man coverage against a linebacker who's like 235 pounds and not nearly the athlete, put him out on the boundary and do what the Washington football team did against Tay Crowder with J.D. McKissic in week two. Remember that? Just a little double move. Tay Crowder got his feet stuck in the mud. J.D. McKissic was up the sideline, and that helped set up the Ricky Seals-Jones touchdown that we hope to see in 2022 with the New York Giants. So I'm thinking he could be a mismatch nightmare, something Giant fans have heard a lot about. I think you can leverage that with smart offensive play calling, specifically when the defense gets caught with man coverage and things of that nature. And then in the running game, the offensive line is a lot better. The offensive line is a ton better. So I'm thinking they can really establish the run with Saquon Barkley as well. But I'm just interested to see what the identity is. And I'm going to try, like, you guys are going to be at training camp. Please let us know what you guys are seeing.
Yeah, definitely. And Chris Peace says, predicts that Barkley's going to ball out and be healthy and have 3,000 all-purpose yards. What do you think, Nick? You think that's a little too optimistic, or you think that's realistic?
I mean, he might have the opportunity to, but Chris, if he does, please make that smile again. I know this is not great for the audio version of this, but if you're on the YouTube, look at Chris's picture. He is cheesing in this picture. And if Barkley goes for almost 3,000 all-purpose, sign me up. I wouldn't bet on that, to be real, but anything is possible. And we know he has a dynamic skill set, and he's in the best situation that he's probably been in his entire career in 2022.
All right. I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun if Barkley balls out, definitely. All right. Tana's got a question about the defense, and this is actually a question I have. I want to get your take, Nick. How concerned are we that Bradberry is now gone? I mean, we don't know right now who they're going to plug in there. Right now, I think the incumbent's going to be Aaron Robinson, who was the slot cornerback, only played half a season last year because he was coming off the injury, but I don't know, man. I mean, who do you think's the best fit based on who they have on the roster? I think they're going to get a veteran personally, but, you know, I'm not sure what they do now, because to me, now they have a major hole that they didn't have before.
Firstly, I am concerned about it, specifically with the system that Wink Martindale likes to run. Secondly, I think Aaron Robinson should be the player that you try out on the boundary. He actually had more snaps out there as an outside cornerback than he did in the slot last season, I believe. And he was effective in both. He was effective in press man coverage, had some really good plays against the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of them came against Jalen Reagor, but this is somebody who missed all of training camp and kind of got forced into action. I felt like he rose to the occasion. Now, does that mean he's going to be the definite option as the second cornerback penciled in? No, he still has to earn that. And there's still a lot of room for error in a very, very volatile position, which is the cornerback position. But I remain optimistic about Aaron Robinson. I believe as well, Patty, that they're going to go out and they're going to pursue a veteran, or they're going to go out and they're going to sign somebody who was cut and released from another team, try to squeak them onto the practice squad. They may bring them in. But with Wink Martindale's system, if he wants to bring the pressure and run middle of the field closed man coverage a lot of the times, cover one type of coverage, you're going to need guys who can hold up in man coverage, guys who are disciplined at the line of scrimmage, guys who can press, guys who can jam, guys who can really be sticky and stay in phase in coverage. And right now you look at the Giants corner group, it doesn't jump out at you. Okay. Doesn't mean they can't do it, but it's not necessarily proven. And I'm wondering how Wink can mask that. I don't know if he's going to really just transition to be a more zone heavy type of defensive coordinator. As we saw last year, when he didn't have the cornerbacks to back it up with the Ravens, he kept bringing the pressure and he stuck to his identity and he got burned in the end.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Aaron Robinson. He was primarily a slot cornerback in college, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't really play on the outside much. He's got the size. In terms of making that transition from the slot to full-time, you know, full-time perimeter duty, are we talking a big jump here? Or does it kind of depend on the player?
So he had some significant snaps, I think, out on the boundary now, but they used him as like the star down there at UCF. So he was in the box. He was playing some safety for them. He's playing overhang. He was kind of just a do-it-all type of guy. I look at his coverage skills. I think he can play outside. And I think he does have enough size to have some success out there. I don't have his measurables in front of me, but I want to say he is teeters on 6 foot, like 5'11", maybe like 190, 195 pounds, something around there, right? And from the clips in the film that I watched on him last year, when he was aligned outside, it wasn't like he was overmatched. He had plenty of reps where he was carrying, you know, number ones vertical on nine routes and flipping his hips and reacting to double moves. I felt like he was pretty disciplined at the line of scrimmage, made some really, really big plays in high leverage situations on 4th and 10, the 4th and 2 against Philly, where Jalen Reagor kind of fired his feet at the line of scrimmage. Really did a nice shoulder fake for Jalen Reagor, cut inside, and then he patiently waited for Jalen Reagor to declare himself, and then he jumped and got his inside hand or his outside hand on the football to knock it away on a 4th and 2 to force a turnover on downs. And that's a really big play from a rookie who doesn't necessarily have the training camp behind him. So if there's one person I'm optimistic about, it's definitely Aaron Robinson. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that he can have success. And that's not even really looking at the fact that Adoree Jackson, Aaron Robinson gets injured. What are we doing at that point? Jaren Williams, Rodarius Williams, no slight on those individuals, but that is a big step from being a full-time cornerback in a system that really, really needs cornerbacks to thrive in man coverage. For those players to make that step, it's a tall task.
Yeah, and indeed, definitely. All right, let's hear from Dwayne Lowry. How big of a steal was Darian Beavers at 182?
I like Darian Beavers. I do like Darian Beavers. I'm a little concerned with his overall range as a linebacker, but I love the fact that you can put this dude out on the edge, and he actually does a solid job using his hands up the pass rushing arc to create separation. He's not going to be the bendiest or anything like that. He's not going to be the most explosive, but he's strong. If you do put him in the box, he can really take blocks on very, very well, sinks himself, wins the leverage battle, stacks and sheds, plays the peekaboo game, gets his eyes on the running back, and then makes a tackle aggressively. I like Darian Beavers. I'm wondering what his role will be with the New York Giants. I don't know if he's going to be athletic enough, and I know the RAS score says that he's this really good athlete. He went to the combine. He tested very, very well. I watched the film. I see a little bit of a slower player, but I think he can fit a role within Martindale's scheme, but I don't think he can be that every down nickel type of linebacker next to Blake Martinez. But I really hope he proves me wrong, because I really love the kid in general, and I love the physical temperament that he plays with. And he's just a playmaker too. He's out there just making plays a lot of the time. If you watch a lot of the games throughout Cincinnati this year, a lot of big games, he was just out there, and you could just see he was kind of one of the heartbeats of a defense that had guys like Sauce Gardner on it. So I think that's another interesting factor into that selection.
Well, I'm thinking with him, because they've got a lot of competition now at that inside linebacker spot, because they also have, I don't have my list in front of me, the Indiana kid, Micah McFadden. And, you know, now you have also Carter Coughlin coming back. You've got Tay Crowder, TJ Brunson's going to be back. I think, you know, you could throw Cam Brown in there. Somebody's going to lose a roster spot, I would say, probably out of that group. Who remains to be seen? I mean, special teams will probably decide it, but it's going to be a lot of competition at that inside linebacker spot, which was so thin. You know, we talk about thin positions. The tight end position was thin. The safety position is still a little bit thin, in my opinion, but definitely inside linebacker no longer thin. All right, Chris Gannon asks us, favorite 2022 draft pick? Oh, that might be tough to answer right now.
Well, I'm going to eliminate the first two, because Kayvon Thibodeau, Evan Neal. If you told me in September that the Giants are going to come out with Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal. I'll be like, oh, the Giants and the Bears finished with the two worst records in the NFL. Now, they were close to that, but they still had top 10 picks, and I love those two selections. But let's remove that. So it gets very difficult for me, Patty, because I love the Daniel Bellinger pick. I like the Dane Belton pick, and I like the Micah McFadden pick. It's that cluster of the fourth round and then the first fifth round pick. Mm-hmm. If I had to nail down one, I think I might go with Micah McFadden. And it's, I've heard just nothing but great things about Micah McFadden. And when you watch him, he seems to be a perfect fit for Wink Martindale's system that wants to blitz and wants to pressure. He was very good at blitzing and pressuring. Kinder, and I said this on other podcasts, remind me a little bit of like a poor man's Leo Chanel. And that's not a slight on Micah McFadden. It's just Leo Chanel is a more well-rounded prospect. And I don't even know how accurate that is, because I felt like McFadden was more natural dropping back than Chanel, but Chanel was just a little bit better in the box. Not that McFadden was bad in that area, it's just Chanel was one of the best in college football last year doing that. So I think if I had to pick one, it would be Micah McFadden. I think he can have a year one impact. He might not start right away. Tay Crowder misses a couple tackles, isn't in the position that he needs to be by week three. Who knows? Micah McFadden can work his way into the starting lineup.
Yeah. And by the way, Micah McFadden is also my pick for, you know, outside of the day one picks. And I believe tomorrow, folks, I have the Indiana Locked On host who's going to give us the lowdown on Micah McFadden. I think that show's scheduled for tomorrow. I don't have it in front of me, but pretty sure that's it. We've got some more stuff coming up. I've got a lot of shows that I pre-tape, but definitely a guy that I like. All right. Tana's back with another question about which UDFA do you think has the best opportunity to make the roster? The UDFAs, you know, there's a reason why I haven't done anything fully on them. I did do one article on them, but some of these guys aren't officially signed. They're coming in with the intention to sign. So I've gotten burnt in the past before, you know, when I've said, oh, here are the pick, you know, the UDFAs. Now, I know the four that I listed are, I'm pretty sure those guys are going to be signed because I've interviewed some of their coaches and whatnot. So I know they're coming in. But I don't know. Corbin, the running back, I like him, definitely. Corker is another guy, Yusuf Corfer. Corker, the safety out of Kentucky. I spoke today with Chris Hinton's trainer, who was very high on him, obviously. So I'm going to see if I can get hold of him. I mean, Nick, who are you thinking as far as the UDFAs that we know are definitely coming in, which, you know, again, no announcement's been made. So we're kind of shooting in the dark here a little bit.
I think Corbin, because of the position of running back, the fact the Giants didn't address that in the draft, that really gives him a leg up. And from the bit I've seen on him, I did respect his game down there at Florida State. And I like Corker. He's more of a box guy, more of a physical guy. You don't necessarily want to trust him in man coverage. But the other safety out of San Diego State, Thompson, he is somebody that's really interesting to me because he is somebody who can cover. They used him in a variety of different roles. There were a couple plays where he came off route concepts and then sunk underneath other routes, came away with interceptions, high pointing the ball. I think he has good ball skills, has some really big physical hits on tape. So Thompson from San Diego State, I think it's Trenton Thompson. That's the one that really kind of stuck out to me when I went over the film of a lot of the UDFAs is somebody, not just because the position is a little scarce, and I also loved, and I didn't watch special teams, but I looked at his special team stats. He was pretty damn effective on special teams, blocking kicks, forcing fumbles. So if I had to pick somebody, it would be Thompson. I think he has a good inside track to make the team. And I think Wink Martindale has really made the most of late round safeties or UDFAs in the past. If you look at like Chuck Clark and players like that, they were all like 6-round picks and he made a lot out of them. And I think Thompson is a very, very interesting player that the Giants landed in during the undrafted free agent period. So I'm excited about that one.
All right. I missed this one from Wolf Say. Sorry, Wolf. I just went back and I found this one. Do you think they'll line Barkley as an outside receiver like they did under Shurmur? Shurmur didn't really do it as much, but yes, I think that was the intention. And based on what we saw at the mini camp that one day, they were lining them up outside. So I do think that is in the cards.
Absolutely. We saw the in the New Orleans game. Jason Garrett did that, and Saquon Barkley ended up scoring a touchdown up the boundary on that one pass in the comeback against the New Orleans Saints. I expect to see that. And it's, again, you get caught in man coverage. Saquon Barkley is a better athlete than a lot of those linebackers that are going to be out there. So take advantage of that. Take what the defense is giving you and make them pay.
Absolutely. All right, Nick, while I wait for some more questions to come in, I want to ask you about the defensive line, because, you know, they did draft Davidson. They signed a couple of guys for that defensive line. And, you know, one of the things we saw in the mini camp is we saw a 2-4-5, I think it was a 2-4-5 alignment. Do I have that right? My number's right. 2-4-5. Yeah. 2-4-5, where they had the two guys, the two defensive tackles with their hand in the dirt. They had the two edge rushers. And it was kind of like almost an amoeba type thing where, you know, first they put their hands in the dirt, then they stood up and they were milling around. And it was kind of, you know, I thought intriguing. In terms of Kayvon Thibodeau, I keep saying Thibodeau, and I know that's not right. In terms of Thibodeau, his presence, I can see that having a potential effect on Leonard Williams now, Azeez Ojulari, because somebody's now going to have to be double teamed. And I could see him potentially being the double team guy, which may free things up for Leonard Williams and Ojulari. I mean, do you think the Giants pass rush is finally, I don't want to say like they had in 2011, because those were some really great players, but they were three deep and they were able to, you know, pick and choose how they were going to deploy these guys. And it was a case of create your own poison. Or yes. Pick your own poison, excuse me.
Yeah, let's not create our own poison. No, I'm very excited to see what Kayvon Thibodeau can do with this defense next to Leonard Williams and Azeez Ojulari. I like the Azeez Ojulari coming out of the 2021 draft. Never thought he was that alpha type of guy. I thought he could be a nice 1B. Kayvon Thibodeau is a 1A. And I love just his first step. He's insanely explosive off the jump. He can get and win high side with his hands. His bend through contact isn't elite, I wouldn't say. I don't think he's a Myles Garrett type of pass rusher, but I do love what he's going to offer this Giants team. And he still has a lot of development too. And you can kind of see what he was able to put together in 2021, how he grew from 2020, which was an excellent season for him. So there's still development. There's still a lot of upside, but he has all the athletic traits that you want. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he plays with excellent leverage. He can set the edge. He can drop into coverage. And if we watch a lot of the film last year, you saw some 2-4-5 looks from Patrick Graham. You saw a lot of double teams on Leonard Williams, a lot of focus put on Leonard Williams. It's going to be difficult to put a lot of focus on Lenny now, with Kayvon Thibodeau flying around the edge. Not to mention, you think about Wink Martindale and just the pressure packages he brings, Patty. It's going to be a fifth man coming. The offense isn't going to know where it's coming from. You isolate Kayvon Thibodeau in a one-on-one matchup, he can win those one-on-one matchups. And I think that's going to set the Giants defense up for success and hopefully bail out the fact that they're maybe a little bit weak in the secondary.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that. All right, folks, I do have to run two quick commercials. I'm going to run one now, one in a little while. So I apologize. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Hey, Giant fans, did you know there's only one place to find what you need quickly for your car or truck? And that's at rockauto.com. Rock Auto has over 20 years of offering competitive pricing on thousands of parts for every make, model, and manufacturer. Check out their website today, and don't forget to write down Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Rock Auto delivers everything you need for your car, truck, motorcycle, right to your door. Competitive pricings, they have it all. Check them out today. RockAuto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car, truck, or motorcycle will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On Giants podcast. And as always, thank you for making us your first listen of the day. Or if you watch on YouTube, your first watch of the day, we appreciate you. The show's been growing by leaps and bounds. And yes, somebody asked me if Tana's going to be back on. If he wants on, he's on. We'll do a live show with Tana at some point next week. I'm trying to mix up the guests. These are the guys that I go to because they're so good. Tana and Nick and Coach Gene and you know, and Shakes and who am I missing? Tommy G, can't forget him. So we'll try and mix it up a little bit and bring you different opinions because, you know, these are up and coming bright talent and content creators. So really happy to have them with us. Nick, my friend, I have to ask you, now that I've got my list in front of me, which I was looking for before, there is a draft pick here that I would like to get your take on, because it was a little bit of a head scratcher for me, given his size. And I'm talking about the cornerback Cordell Flott. You know, now here's the thing. The Giants, I think, ultimately knew that James Bradbury wasn't going to be on this roster one way or another, whether they cut him or whether they traded him. I know that the board fell in a certain way. The top two cornerbacks were off the board before the Giants even went on the clock. I don't know necessarily about, you know, the day two graded guys and the day three graded guys, but I thought this selection of Flott was kind of, you know, it was like, didn't see that coming. What did you think of this pick, and what can this kid bring as a rookie? I mean, he's kind of slight a frame, you know, I think 170 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, he's 170 pounds, about 6 foot. Honestly, he looks a lot longer than he actually was at the combine, which was a little bit shocking to me, because I thought this guy had like really long arms, like 33 plus inches, like his teammate who the Giants brought in as a UDFA, Darren Evans. He has like 33 plus inch arms, but his arms were only slightly over 30 inches. I think they were in like the 10th percentile, which isn't excellent, but I believe Flott's future is going to be as a slot receiver. I think or as a slot cornerback, playing the nickel position. And that's what he did a lot at LSU. I think he's wildly feisty. I think he is somebody that can play man coverage. I think he's a good athlete, has good hips, good footwork, all of those things. But I think this is more of a developmental pick for maybe 2023. I think he's going to see the field because the Giants, I mean, you're not going to keep people on your 53-man roster and not have them play, specifically with Wink Martindale, who likes to maximize all of his defensive assets. But he's 20 years old. He's 170 pounds. Honestly, when you watch him play, I felt like he is one of the more aggressive, swagged up type of dudes. Like the guy wants to hit, he flies downhill, and he actually has a little bit of pop, but that's at the college level. I don't know how translatable that's going to be into the NFL. I'm a little bit worried about that. I think you can put him in man coverage. You could feel comfortable having him in man coverage. In zone, he had good instincts to click and close downhill whenever routes were kind of coming in between him. I feel like he can work in pattern match type because he's a smart kid. I love his temperament. I love how he plays. But I think 2023 might be more of a year that we should look for Cordell Flott to be a real asset, just because he's jumping from SEC football, which is great, to the NFL at 20 years old at 170 pounds. It's going to get those physical receivers and tight ends, man. They're going to box you out, and they're going to use their strength against you if you can't match it. I think he has a temperament to match it. Now he just needs to kind of prove it on the football field. Thought it was a little early, but I like the fact that they identified their people. They had him in for a top 30 visit. They liked him. And I appreciate the fact that Joe Shane is sticking to his guns. He's going to draft the players that he wants. Like I said, Wandale Robinson, Cordell Flott, they both have outlier traits. Wandale Robinson has many. Joe Shane said, I don't really care what you think. We have a plan for these players. And I respect that. And I'm excited to see how it works out.
And by the way, in the past, it wasn't always the case that the top 30 visits ended up in the Giants draft board. You know, sometimes they would come in and it would be a smokescreen. I think just about every draft pick the Giants made had a top 30 visit. I think there might've been maybe one or two that didn't. So that just goes to show you, and somebody actually pointed that out to Shane, you know, or asked about it. And Shane's like, well, I don't want to give away my secrets, but you know, you guys are pretty good at tracking that stuff. So just a nice little hint for us moving forward, if we want to, you know, figure out who the Giants might be looking at down the line. All right, Tutu Azuri. I'm a defensive player. Super excited with Coach Wink and his players this season. In my opinion and experience, I can say the Giants defense will be a top five this year. Nick, I don't know. I mean, would you say top five? I mean, again, the loss of Bradbury, cutting Bradbury, that's a huge, huge question mark for me. I mean, I think with Bradbury, definitely a top 10 defense. I don't know, man. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I think top five is a little bit rich for my taste, to be real. But you have a different defensive coordinator in here now, a much more aggressive one. You added assets along your defensive front, not just Kayvon Thibodeau, but guys like Jahad Ward and Jelly and players like that. I think top five is a little bit much, but the Giants don't have to play the AFC West, so they don't have to see those quarterbacks. No Patrick Mahomes, no Justin Herbert this year like they did last year, no Derek Carr. So, you know, I would say probably top 15, I think, is a realistic bar to try and strive for. I'd be happy with the top 15 defense, but top five, you know, go for gold, you know, swing for the fences, as they say.
Definitely. All right. Now, this is an interesting one because I actually wanted to ask you about this. So Wolf Zay wants to know if we think Galladay comes close to being the receiver that the Giants paid for last season. Nick, let's talk about how Galladay ended up being used last year and where the Giants maybe went wrong with their usage of him when he was healthy versus how he probably should be used or will be used in the offense this year.
Yeah, so Kenny Galladay last year with Jason Garrett, he was visibly upset about his usage. I felt like a lot of the quick game concepts that Jason Garrett wanted to use, the play calling of trying to pick up 10 yards in three plays rather than creating explosive plays, was something that really probably stuck in his craw, because I feel like Kenny Galladay is a player you can use vertically. Now, he's not a burner, but he's a big body. If you isolate him in one-on-one situations, he can use that big frame, that large catch radius. He can climb the proverbial ladder and make those contested catches. You didn't see a lot of deep shots to Kenny Galladay all that often. Now, Jason Garrett's defense, the offensive line was very bad last year, and I think that plays a factor into all of this. But even with that said, if you would have told me that Kenny Galladay got paid a huge contract and then you watched how he was used, you would have never thought that. He wasn't used like he was a big asset that the team just went out and spent big money to kind of bring on to the squad. He wasn't used that way at all. Now, I think there's going to be much more shots downfield, a lot more vertical concepts. You can have Kenny Galladay being used downfield, used a little bit more often, maybe on those deep digs in the middle of the field as well. I think Brian Daboll is going to probably bring a lot of those types of schemes and play calls into this offense and try to really unlock Kenny Galladay. Kenny Galladay also had a slow start with the New York Giants. He was dinged up in training camp, and there were a lot of people who were a little upset about that because Joe Judge was a little bit, I guess you could say, cautious about bringing him back from that. So there was also this awkward kind of start here in New York for Kenny Galladay, but I'm expecting bigger things for him. Now, to the question, will he play to that contract? I think he's making about 17 a year. It's still a lot of money, but I think it's definitely possible because I believe in Kenny Galladay's skill set. Will it happen? That's kind of another story, to be honest. I'm not really 100% certain.
When Galladay spoke to the media at the mini camp that we were admitted to, he was like a different man. And I wrote about this on Giants Country. I wrote about how the body language, he was more relaxed. He was smiling. His answers were lengthier. Whereas last year, you know, the body language just screamed, "I'm not happy." And you could just tell. You could just tell he was frustrated last year. So I think so far, and remember, they were, 2 days in with learning the playbook at that point? I think so far, Kenny Galladay is liking what they're doing on offense. Now, will it translate to production? Usually, if you have a system that you buy into, good things can happen. So I'm optimistic that it'll happen, but we'll have to see if it does, because, you know, look, I'm always optimistic going in. You know, I always think that there's going to be production. There's going to be, you know, things for us to smile about. And then, you know, life gets in the way and things happen. So we got to be careful about getting too overly optimistic. So
think about, before we go to Nimar's question, how long did it take for us to see a back shoulder play to Kenny Galladay?
I know.
Like that's one of his bread and butters right there, as somebody who's not necessarily a natural separator. So even if that's instantiated into this offense, it's a win. Sorry, go on.
Nope, no problem. All right, Nimar asked about Nick. Well, he's asked you, do you think we'll cut Darius Slayton? So that's directed to you, Nick. I'll let you take that.
I think it's an option to release Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton has been one of the more inefficient wide receivers over the last two seasons. He drops footballs in some very, very big spots. It's been downhill since that 2019 season. He's not the guy. I think if he shows up and he's fully bought in, which I expect him to be because he's a true competitor, I think he can earn a roster spot. But if you look, they spent a day two pick on a wide receiver. They bring Robert Foster in. They bring Richie James in. And those guys might not be as talented as Darius Slayton on paper, but they have experience with the coaching staff in terms of Robert Foster dating back to his time with Brian Daboll in Alabama. So there's going to be those roster spots up for grabs. And I think the most important part of this is you can save, $2 or $2.5 million on the cap.
2.5.
And the Giants are really tight for money. So If I had to say yes or no, I'd lean towards yes, but I do acknowledge that he's still a talented guy who can earn a roster spot. But you look at a lot of these moves prior to the draft and during the draft, they suggest that it's definitely a real option.
And if I could just add one other thing, I don't think they're going to flat out cut him. I think what they're going to do is let him come in and compete. If they flat out cut him and don't give him an opportunity, that doesn't really send the best message to the locker room.
No.
So right now they do have some breathing room. They have enough money to sign guys, you know, their draft class. They have some left. They will have some leftover money to sign, a free agent or two if they want to. But I think they're going to let him compete. I'm not optimistic that he makes the roster, quite honestly. And Nick, in answer to your question, Tana said the Eagles game was probably the first time we saw the back shoulder fade to Galladay.
And then
we didn't see the Eagles until what, November for the first time?
But Tana put the prompt LOL at the end, which is excellent for the audio audience. They need to know that that's what Tana was getting at, because it is a laugh out loud type of situation.
Yes. Shows you how bad the offensive play calling was. I mean, my goodness. Absolutely. It was bad. So like I said, they didn't see the Eagles until I want to say November. Am I right? It was like, I know they saw them over Thanksgiving weekend and then they see them again in December. If I have my timing right,
they were both two late games. Yes.
Yeah. So it was crazy. It was definitely crazy. All right. On getting back to the draft picks, I want to go back to this kid, DJ Davidson, that they took out at Arizona State in the with the second of their three fifth round picks. This guy, I asked about him. I had one of the Locked On Arizona State host on there, the Locked On Sun Devils host, I should say. And where does this guy fit in? I mean, to me, he looks like a one and a zero, one and maybe a three tech. I don't know if he's necessarily a five tech, maybe a two down type of player. Is that how you see him, Nick?
I see him more as a nose. I think he's going to be a nose who can stack and shed. He's a big body. I don't have the weight in front of me, but I believe he's like 6'4", about 335-ish. He's around that. So I think he can be the younger version of what they're expecting out of Justin Ellis, who knows this system very well. From what I've seen of DJ Davidson, he seems to be he's very adept at stacking and shedding. He's not the most athletic laterally. He's a big guy. He can occupy a lot of space. Very violent hands. I saw this one play, I can't remember who it was against, that was really good. He tracked this ball carrier down from the backside using a really quick club and swim move, which I was like, okay, that's really excellent timing and precision in his hands. So he showed that. He's also like almost 25 years old, so he's a little bit long in the tooth there for a rookie. I think they loved the kid, though. And I think that was also another thing that Joe Shane did with these later round picks. They liked the person and they wanted to bring in the right person. You hear a lot in the scouting community is, you know, you miss on draft picks sometimes because the person wasn't who you thought they were. And I think they really did their investigation into DJ Davidson and think he can come in and he can fit what they want on the defensive line as someone who is tough and who can shed blocks and make some plays against the run.
Yeah. And, you know, a side note, I put a picture up of him with the articles we were doing. There was this one picture. I swear he looked like a jacked up Evan Engram. I was like, whoa. I was like, whoa, man. But I know fans don't want to hear that, but that was my first impression. Okay. Side guy, Bry. I haven't seen much talk about needing more help at wide receiver. I have not seen what UDFA receivers they have brought in. Do you think DJ has enough receiver weapons? Injuries are going to happen. You know, that's an interesting question, Nick. I thought the same thing. Now, you know, to answer the part about which UDFAs they brought in, the list hasn't been finalized and it won't be until Thursday. So you'll want to be following me on Twitter, everybody. I will take a picture of the roster the Giants hand us out and I will tweet it out if you want to see who is on the roster and what numbers and all that good stuff. But, you know, I thought about this, you know, so they've got Galladay, they've got Shepard, who's going to probably miss the first half of the year, I would think, while he's recovering from that Achilles injury. So you can't really count on him. So that leaves you with Galladay, Wandale Robinson, Kadarius Toney. Who am I missing?
Robert Foster, Richie James.
Yeah. So, I mean, and injuries do happen. You know, yeah. Toney had some injury issues last year. Galladay had some injury issues there. Are you concerned that the depth is maybe not as good as it should be at receiver?
I don't know if I'm concerned. I mean, I'm a little concerned if something happens to Kenny Golladay, who's going to be their big body presence, because you have a lot of guys who hover from, well, 5'8 in terms of Wandale Robinson to like the 5'11 range and like Sterling Shepard and then Kadarius Toney, guys who aren't necessarily big body presence. I guess you could say David Sills is that. Is he going to realistically make the team? Colin Johnson is that. That's kind of a carryover from a previous regime. He's still on the R-Lads depth chart, so I think that's important to note because he's somebody who kind of fits the bill as a backup to Kenny Golladay. I think if injuries happen or if something happens to Kadarius Toney or Kenny Golladay, it's not necessarily a great situation. I'm hoping that the offensive play calling will be able to overcome that. I think the receiver room is still in a better position than probably most of the years that we've seen over the last probably like half decade. So I don't think it's a huge glaring issue, but it is one that I think it's worth noting as you brought up. And another name that one player, and I know you didn't want to go into UDFAs, but I think the kid from Michigan, Daylon Baldwin, is one that our lads at least has accepted as possibly a signing. He was somebody who transferred like twice in college. I believe he went to Morgan State initially, then he went to Jackson State, and then he ended up at Michigan. He only had like 17 catches this last year. I don't expect him to make the final roster. And typically you're not going to find many guys who are going to make the final roster in the UDFA type of range, unless it was like Austin Mack a couple of years ago who ended up making the roster and had a solid impact, I would say, in his rookie season. So you're rolling with the guys you have. And honestly, bringing in Robert Foster and Richie James, I feel like was a smart move just to add veteran presence for multiple different positions. Foster can play X, he can play Z. James is more of a slot type of guy, special teamer.
Yeah, and they're going to need it because, you know, injuries do happen for sure. All right, Dwayne has a question for you, Nick. Do you see Belton beating out Love for the strong safety spot?
So I don't think he's going to necessarily beat Love out, but I think they'll both be used interchangeably. I think Wink Martindale, when you look at what he does with his personnel, man, he'll come out there with a personnel package with like four outside linebackers, five outside linebackers, and then use them all over the second level. He'll use three, four safety looks. He doesn't really care. So I don't think he's going to beat Julian Love out. I think Julian Love is one of the more undersung, underappreciated assets on defense, basically since he got here in 2019. I wouldn't be shocked if an injury happens at cornerback and they try to see if Julian Love can line up in man coverage outside, just because we've seen that before in a different system, a much different system than Patrick Graham, but still he's that versatile. So I think Belton's going to see the field in year one. I think Julian Love will see the field quite often as well. I think they can both coexist. And when you look at the safety room right now, there's not a lot of other options. I like the UDFAs, but Julian Love is a true professional who can wear a lot of hats. So I don't think Belton will beat him out, but I think they'll both be used. I think you're going to see Belton used in the box. You're going to see him at overhang, apex, whatever you want to call it. He's going to wear a lot of hats as well. That's one reason why they drafted him in the fourth round, was because he was so versatile and he was a ball hawk coming out of that pesky zone defense ran by Kirk Ferentz up there in Iowa.
And also, don't forget, this is the last year of Julian Love's rookie contract. Yeah. So if they want to move on from him after this year, maybe they're looking at Belton as a guy who will ultimately be the quote-unquote masking tape. I think that's the nickname they gave to Julian Love last year, because he fixes everything, you know? He's so versatile, he could fix anything. So that's a possibility for sure. All right, Renato from Brazil sends his greetings. So Renato, thanks for checking in with us. We love you. Thank you so much for your support and for the fantastic questions you send me for Twitter Tuesday, which, by the way, we'll bring back next week. I know a lot of you started sending me questions and I haven't run it because I just haven't had a slot open, but we will bring Twitter Tuesday back. It hasn't gone away for good. So do keep those cards and letters coming, folks. And if I don't get them on podcast, I'll kick them over to Giants Country. So one way or another, I got you guys. All right, Nick, going back to the draft picks, I want to talk a little bit more about Bellinger's game because, all right, to me, all right, you've got Ricky Seals-Jones, you have Jordan Akins, you have Bellinger now. Am I crazy to say that I see a little bit of overlap, or do you see maybe one of those guys potentially being the H-back that they can move around in that off, you know, that backfield, which I believe is a big reason why they didn't retain fullbacks, because they wanted an H-back. So, you know, what do you see with those guys?
So if you want an H-back, the kid from Oklahoma they brought in UDFA, Jeremiah Hall, is definitely a name. I tweeted out that he reminded me of Elijah Penny after I heard that the Giants might have signed him. I think he has that interesting H-back type role. But in terms of the three tight ends that you brought up, I think Daniel Bellinger, and it's hard to really make this statement because we haven't seen him block in the NFL yet, but I think he has the highest upside as a blocker. rather than a Ricky Seals-Jones or a Jordan Akins, who to me aren't necessarily blocking types of tight ends. I think Ricky Seals-Jones is somebody who can come in and he can be an effective weapon in the passing game if he stays healthy, former wide receiver, body type. You know, he can make those kind of contested catches, can do enough to kind of get in your way as a blocker. He was used in Washington as an H-back, pulling sometimes to the play side counters and things like that, just kind of chipping the end man on the line of scrimmage and getting in his way. But he's pretty wild and erratic with his hand usage as a blocker. Jordan Akins, he was a little bit more of a receiver out there for Houston. He played under Andy Bischoff, who is the Giants' current tight end coach. And then Daniel Bellinger. Bellinger can block. Bellinger's a dog as a blocker. At least he was in college, and you could tell he really understands how to position his body. And even sometimes when he doesn't win with leverage because he's like 6 foot six, he does a really good job with his hands and kind of using his core strength to torque and turn defenders away from the desired gap. Now, is that going to translate well when you're playing much stronger players? That's something that I guess remains to be seen, but he comes from a very run heavy offense out there at San Diego State. The Aztecs love to run the football. And I think he probably has some more upside than what we saw as a receiver. I think he can be a short to intermediate safety blanket with soft hands because he has really good hands in college. I think he only had three drops throughout his college career, has made some really impressive contested catches when he was asked to do so. So I really like that Daniel Bellinger pick. And I think by year, maybe halfway through this season, he might be seeing the field a lot more often. But that, again, we have to see how this offense is even run with Kafka and Brian Daboll kind of leading it. But I really like the Bellinger pick. I don't know if I would say that there's necessarily overlap. I mean, Bellinger can do H-back type role stuff, but I don't know if that's how you want to really maximize him. We've seen Seals-Jones do it, but that's not really necessarily his game. So I don't really see any of them as true H-backs, but I think you can probably try to fit the square peg into a round hole and use them in that manner.
Yeah. All right. Now I want to put something on the screen here that Tana brought up. He said he would not be surprised if, and the he that he's referring to here is Leonard Williams, if we trade him for something at the deadline, if the Giants are out of it. Now, Leonard Williams, if I'm not mistaken, has one more year on his contract, I think. I think it's one more year after this year. He does have a big cap hit. That contract is just ridiculous. Now, that said, Nick and Tana, I'm not so sure they would trade him at the deadline. I mean, unless the team totally falls apart. But look, I keep saying this, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to throw cold water on the optimism here that a lot of you have. I'm not so sure the Giants are ready yet to make a run for a playoff spot. Now, maybe they do, and I'll take it. But I think there's still, you know, there's a lot of things working against them, starting with it's a new system on all sides of the ball. They've got to get used to it. They've got to play fast, come up to speed. You know, we've got to find out, is Jones the guy that can lead this offense? The cornerback situation is now a big question mark. There are questions that have me wondering, okay, is this going to be maybe the last non-playoff year we see before they finally turn the corner? Next year, they'll have a better cap situation. They'll have additional draft picks because I think they're going to get two additional comp picks, if I'm not mistaken, a fifth and a seventh. So I'm just wondering, you know, a rebuild doesn't take just 1 year. And I know some of you will say, well, look at the Bengals or look at this team, you know, the 49ers, they turned it around. They went from worst to first. Yeah, they had a coaching staff that was in place for multiple years. So that's how I see it. Do you see it the same way, Nick?
Well, yeah, and they also had Joe Burrow. So, like, right. Not again, I'm not trying to take shots at Daniel Jones, but Joe Burrow is a top 10, top 5 quarterback, especially when you look at his age in the National Football League. Daniel Jones hasn't proven that to us. I would love for him to prove that to us. And you're right, there's a lot of mess around him. And I think all of those are fair points, but he still hasn't shown you some of the traits that some of these other top quarterbacks have seen, specifically when he has to process pre to post snap. So I think that's the big reason why. I agree with you, though, Patty. I'm not expecting playoffs, and I'm not going to be upset if they don't make playoffs. I'm just looking for incremental just gains, really. I just want the team to be better, and I want them to be on the right path and embrace maybe a quote-unquote rebuild, if you want to label it that way, instead of just kind of put Band-Aids, Band-Aid, and Band-Aid everything. And that's what kind of we've seen over the last 5 years. Like, let this happen. We'll see, and we'll evaluate after this year, and then we can go from there. And then hopefully in the future, 2023, 2024, this is a much more competitive product. I think they're going to try to be competitive this year. Sure. This is still a young team. Still a young team, young coaching staff. So
Yeah, it's got to come together. I mean, the seeds are in place, but the, you know, the plant has to grow, so to speak. All right. Diego asks, when are the rookies going to start camp? They're coming in this weekend. Thursday, they're going to come in for their physicals, their equipment, all that stuff. The rookie mini camp is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then after that, I suspect they will be back for phase two of the off-season program, which is ongoing. Now, obviously, I think there are rules that if you still have classes, I don't think you can join it. So I don't know what schools are still having classes and whatnot, but that may factor in. But they're going to be here. The rookies, they'll be here. And like I said before, follow me on Twitter. You can follow, you know, and any of us on Twitter. We will have observations, photos, videos, all that good stuff. And of course, I'm going to do a pod on all that stuff. All right, folks, I got to take one more commercial break. Nick's got a bail out at a quarter to nine. So we'll continue to take your questions. We'll continue to talk Giants. So we'll be right back after this quick ad. All right, Giant fans, we have more coming up on today's Locked On Giants podcast. But first, betonline.net is the only place that offers the best information on the latest odds, contests, and player props for all your sports betting needs. No matter what sport you're into, betonline.net has you covered. Plus, they offer everything you need to know for live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. Head on over to betonline.net today to learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. Thank you, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On Giants podcast. You got Patricia Traina here and Nick Filato. The man is amazing. I love to listen to him. I love talking ball with him. Hope you are enjoying yourself. And I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. And let's continue talking about or answering some of your questions here. Wolf Zay wants to know, is 7 wins possible? I think it is, given the schedule. I think the Giants have, what, the fourth weakest schedule, if I'm not mistaken, based on strength of schedule. But, you know, then again, strength of schedule, that's based on last year. Teams have improved. But I think 7 wins is doable, don't you?
I definitely think it's doable. And hopefully the Giants can start fast for the first time in what seems like a while, because a lot of teams don't know exactly what their offense is going to do. And maybe they can catch some teams with, with their pants down, for a lack of a better term, and get a couple early wins. And then wait until teams get film on them, and then they can start really reacting to what Daniel Jones and Brian Daboll are doing. I think 7 wins is something that they can definitely strive for and is definitely achievable.
All right. I'm with it. All right. Neymar wants to know if training camp is going to be open to the public this year. Neymar, I don't know. I will probably hear something in the next several weeks when we start going to the OTAs. I think it's wait and see. But if I had to take a guess, and don't hold me to this, if I had to take a guess, I think in some capacity it will be. I'm not sure if it's going to be, you know, a fan fest like they did last year, or how exactly it's going to work. But if I had to take a guess, I think you will get to see at least, you know, one practice, if not more. But I don't know. I don't know. They haven't said it. Fingers crossed that this COVID virus stays, you know, in the background, because Lord knows I am so itching to get back to normal, as close as possible to normal as we can. So thanks for that question. Let's see. Here we go. This is from Vinny G-Man. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it 1 or 2 years with a quarterback, but didn't it take Eli 4 years to get locked in? Ooh, okay.
It did take Eli 4 years.
Yeah.
And I was in high school during that 2007 season. And I remember after that Vikings game when Eli Manning threw the three interceptions and Chad Greenway took one back to the house. I remember being like, oh man, this guy might not be it. I was like freaking out, a 15-year-old me, you know. lo and behold, you know, ended up working out for the Giants. They got hot and the rest is history. And that is a point to make. It seems like right now a lot more people are a lot more impatient with quarterback. I mean, think back to like Carson Palmer sat for an entire year behind John Kitna when he was the first overall pick. Do you see that happening nowadays? That's not necessarily something that you'll see too often. So generally your point is definitely correct.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, after 3 seasons, people were ready to ship Eli out of town on a train, a one-way ticket, because he was just so up and down and inconsistent. And then, you know, and he had, I think, a little better talent around him. I mean, Daniel does too, but Let me ask you this: if we're on the, since we're on the topic of Daniel, a quarterback's progress is never linear. It's going to be up and down. But at the end of the day, Nick, I know stats, you know, you could throw them out and not use them as a measuring tool, but what would be your litmus test to where you say, okay, Daniel Jones has proven to me that he's the guy moving forward?
So I think it would all come down to tape study. It's what I see on tape. Is he getting the football to where it needs to be within the structure of the offense, which is something that I don't feel like he has always done. He sometimes has some slow eyes from pre to post snap. If what he thinks is going to happen pre-snap doesn't happen post-snap, how does he react to that? Does he get to that second read? Does he get to that check down really quickly? Or does he kind of get happy feet and flow to the right of the pocket and try to extend the play and throw through a throwing window by creating that way, which isn't always a bad thing. But when you do it so often, it becomes an issue. Don't think that was a huge issue for him last season. It was a big issue for him in 2020. He's still a young player. But to circle back to your question, it's mainly that. It's I want to see more efficiency, a little bit more accuracy in terms of what he sees pre-snap and how he reacts when it's not that post-snap.
Now, from what I understand, Daniel and Dable got together, or Daniel gave him Dable a list of things he likes to do. So the idea is to get a system together that Daniel can bite it, you know, sink his teeth into. If he can't do that this year, then Lord help us all, because it's going to be a long, long year. And you're right. That's something that bothered me. I'll tell you, last year coming in, I thought, okay, Daniel's going to take that step because year two, the same system, he should be familiar with it. He should be able to quick make decisions. And he wasn't. He, like you said, the pre and post snap reads were just, you know, you watched him and you were like, what are you doing, dude? You know, and that concerned me. That sent up a red flag, because Daniel's a smart guy, but yeah. I got to be honest with you. I started to question his football acumen.
So, and I think another thing that really exacerbated the issue was Jason Garrett. I don't think that marriage was ever going to be one that made any sense, because Jason Garrett never really maximized routes to create yards after the catch. So you kind of put in a lot on Daniel Jones to move the sticks by hitting these quick snag concepts and these quick spot and stick concepts. Just kind of put a lot on his plate. Didn't really give him more easier types of concepts where you can make one read and then fire the football. A lot of things were going downfield. Again, offensive line being an issue definitely played into that. But I think it was really like, and Patty, not to just crap on Jason Garrett, but I sometimes think, what would have happened if the Giants brought in a different offensive coordinator when they hired Joe Judge? I think that, because like, I don't know if Daniel Jones would be any different than what he is right now, but I think we would have saw a lot more creativity with the offense that would have taken some things off of Daniel Jones' shoulders. And I think that's a fair criticism to have of Jason Garrett.
Wasn't there a report that Judge wanted Dable as offensive coordinator?
Yes. And I believe the interview got blocked by Buffalo, if I'm not mistaken, because that would have been a lateral move, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't think that he picked Garrett. Like, I think that was more of a marriage organized by the organization, but I don't have any.
That was a suggestion.
Exactly. So that's kind of setting Joe Judge up for failure too. So there's a lot that kind of goes into that Jason Garrett hire that doesn't sit all that well with me, but I don't have all the facts behind it. I'm just kind of looking at it from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, that was, you know, look, I thought Jason might be good for Daniel because, you know, former quarterback, you know, a guy who's smart. I mean, Jason's a smart man, but the system that I think he tried to run, perfect for Dallas, but the Giants didn't have an all-world offensive line. They didn't have, you know, a Jason Witten. They didn't have a lot of stuff that I think they had in Dallas. And, you know, that Jason used to get up there and say, well, it's a system that we as the Giants design. And I'm like, too much Dallas I saw in that system. And the Giants just didn't have the personnel to run it.
And Patty, too, another thing, like, I have my Dallas fan friends. They all told me, like, I'm so happy you have him as your offensive coordinator now. And I was like, ah, man, like, what you talking about? And then, like, I learned quickly. I was like, they were right. They were right. This is not going to end well, and it didn't.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate because you never like to see somebody, you know, lose their job, because it means that they came up short. And, you know, unfortunately, they all had to pay the price for what went down. And, you know, Giant fans, you know. The one thing that always irked me is how they said, well, we're seeing improvement, you know, behind the scenes. And I'm like, enough of that. Giant fans don't want to hear that. You know, you might be seeing it in the year and a half that you've been on the job, but Giant fans have been watching crappy football since 2012, really, or 2013. So I don't know. When the coach started going with that, down that road, I was like, nah, dude, you're going to lose people if you keep saying that. So, all right, let's see. We've got about 10 more minutes with Nick, and then I got to let him dash because he is a very busy man. Let's get a question here from Anthony Desari. Will the Giants really go either Robinson, Holmes, et cetera, at the other cornerback spot, or will they bring in a vet, even if it's someone with experience in the wing defensive system? I think ideally, Anthony, they're going to see if Aaron Robinson can win that job. Yeah. But I also do think they're going to bring in a vet. They have to, in my opinion, because that's a young room, number one. Bring in a vet to kind of, you know, be the big brother, if you will, but also bring in a guy who, if you need him to play for, a game or two, if there's an injury, you can call on him, you know, not necessarily somebody you want to play for the whole season or most of the season, but somebody, you know, like a security blanket, I would think. Nick, do you, when I say that, do you know of any, are there any names that kind of jump out at you for that potential veteran role?
So two that really jump out. I mean, I agree with what you said, Pat. I think that'll give Robinson the opportunity to win the job, but I still think you should add a veteran, whether that be somebody who's currently on a roster or not. Free agents that kind of come to my mind. Jimmy Smith is the first one. Jimmy Smith is pushing 34 years old. This guy's 33 years old. He has excellent size, physicality, and all the experience you need in a Wink Martindale system. But he's getting a little bit long in the tooth now at this point. I didn't watch a lot of him specifically. I watched a lot of Baltimore's defense. He only played, I think, like 300 snaps last year in Baltimore's system, dealt with some injuries and stuff like that. I think he's an option. He wouldn't have to be relied on to be a number one or number two cornerback. He can be that number three guy, not the slot guy, who can kind of be the leader. I can't speak to his character or anything like that, but if Wink Martindale likes him, you can pursue that if you'll accept a vet minimum deal. That's a whole other thing. Another name that comes to my mind is AJ Bouye. AJ Bouye is somebody who started with the Houston Texans, leveraged really good play to land a big contract with Jacksonville. And now he's kind of bounced around a little bit. I believe he's 30 years old. He has man coverage experience. You can play him on the outside. He has played on the inside. He's one name. And then Kyle Fuller as well, the one that was with the Bears. And then he was with Denver last year. I think it was Denver. He's another one that I would definitely look at, somebody who had a really down year in 2021, but they have good tape playing man coverage. Because that's really what you're looking for. But honestly, guys who can effectively play man coverage aren't really sitting on the free agent wire. So it's another thing you kind of got to factor into this.
I'm trying to think. There's another guy, and I'm forgetting the guy's name now. There was, it's going to come to me after we sign off. I know it. But there was another guy that I was talking with somebody, and they said that this particular player, and maybe if I describe him, Nick, you'll fill in the name. He's probably not going to be the type that comes in on a minimum deal, you know, a veteran minimum deal, but, you know, maybe you can get him on a 2-year deal to kind of service that stopgap veteran. Oh gosh. What is the guy's name? It's driving me nuts. Was he with Atlanta? Was it the Atlanta?
Trufant?
Might've been Trufant.
One of the Trufants is around, and one of the Trufants was in Atlanta. Yeah. So maybe it was that. I'm pulling up a list at the moment.
Yeah, it's not Marcus Trufant. Is there another one?
I think it would be Desmond.
Desmond. Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
I believe he's around. Let me see.
I'm going to look real quick too.
He's around. He was with.
Yeah, Desmond. Season. Desmond. That's the one I'm thinking of. Falcons, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So he was with.
Okay.
He was drafted by the Falcons. He was with the Raiders briefly last year, and I think he was with the Lions for like a year in between that. But he had some good years when he was with the Falcons. I think that's a solid call. But again, don't know how the economics is going to work.
Well, they're going to have some money if they need to do something, but you can't go crazy spending on these guys. I mean, I think a lot of the signings they're going to do from here on out are going to have to be veteran minimums and not, you know, as a result of, we've got to restructure money so that we clear it up, because that's how we got into this mess in the first place. And the Giants, unfortunately, are going to pay for that probably going into next year. By the way, somebody asked about Bradberry and the cap savings. I wouldn't be stunned if they make Bradberry a post-June 1st transaction. I think that makes the most sense, because this way, you know, they save a little bit more on the cap. They get like over $1 million more of savings, you know, because we're not that far off from June 1st. So I'll have to check the transaction wire and see if that's what they did with him. But that's how I would do it. And I wrote about that on Giants Country, what the difference in savings is and, you know, what it would, what the ramifications would be for next year. So, all right, Rosario Papaguzo. That's Tana's dad, by the way. Do you, he's become a big fan of the show. Love you, Papaguzo. Do you think the Giants should have come up with cap money somehow to keep Bradbury? You know, that's interesting, Rosario, because you start to read the reports about how they were trying to negotiate a new deal with other teams in order to trade Bradbury, and it just wasn't going anywhere. I think it was one report by Aaron Wilson where Bradbury turned down, I think something of a they were $5 million apart. And I was like, what is going on here? You know? So I don't know. I personally would have added more voidable years to his deal, which would have meant they carrying that contract on the book beyond 2023. But Shane obviously wanted to rip the bandage off. I mean, and look, in retrospect, you saw what he did with Logan Ryan, how they ripped that bandage off. They want to start clean and they want to have a fresh, as fresh of a cap as possible next year. And I get that. You don't want to have the mistakes of the past regime carry over and over and over, because you're not going to go anyplace if you have those constant reminders lingering on your books.
Exactly, Pat. You took the words out of my mouth in terms of what the previous regime did. You kind of want to get rid of that star clean. This is a 29-year-old cornerback that I love, but just move on at this point. And you know what that presents, though, Patty, which is very, very exciting for these young guys. It presents an excellent opportunity for Aaron Robinson, for Rodarius Williams, for Jaren Williams. If those guys can seize the day full-on Avenged Sevenfold style, then they could possibly win a starting job going into week one, which is huge for all of those guys. So the opportunity for these young cornerbacks, I'm really excited for.
Yeah. All right, let's see. This is from Vinny G-man. Did anybody see Patrick film on Corbin? I was laughing my butt off. Whoop, I'll still go back to the tape. Another reason. All right, I'm not sure. Do you know what he's talking about? Vinny, I'm not sure I know what you're talking about. You're talking about Jeshaun Corbin. Are you talking about the big run that he had? Is that what you're talking about? Somebody posted, was it you, Nick, that posted the clip of Corbin with the big run, or was that Bobby Skinner? I can't remember.
I mean, I did. He might have too, but.
Okay. I'm not sure what he's referring to there. So, all right. Let's see. Marcus Daniels, how many players from last year's class would you still consider a rookie? Marcus, technically none. They're not rookies anymore. I think I know where you're going with this. You're talking in terms of experience and, you know, who would fall into that rookie, you know, still inexperienced level. So if that's what you're referring to, you could probably make a case of, you know, well, with the draft class, let me see. I don't know if you can say Aaron Robinson. I don't think you could say Tony. Maybe T.J. Brunson because he was injured. I mean, I don't know. Technically, the answer is none. But you know.
I would, if I could, I would say Ellerson Smith.
Yeah.
Rodarius Williams, I think, are the two that really come to my mind, just because Rodarius got injured and Ellerson Smith came back from his training camp injury late in the season, played a solid amount of snaps down the stretch. But if we're going to look at it that way, which Patty's right, none of them are rookies, but if you want to look at it in terms of experience, those are the two that really kind of jump out to me.
Yeah. All right. Another one from Papaguzo. Do you think young guys will develop into being corners? They better. I mean, look, here's the thing to remember. The Giants retained defensive backs coach Jerome Henderson. And boy, I was hoping that he would be kept, because he, if you think about it, last year, he did a pretty good job with those guys. With all the injuries they were having in that defensive secondary, I mean, that whole unit could have totally fallen apart, and it didn't. And that's a credit to Henderson, a former NFL defensive back who the players absolutely love. They love how he teaches. They love how he communicates. And they love that he brings a perspective to the classroom that maybe someone who hasn't played the game at the NFL level doesn't.
Big Jerome Henderson guy right here. So I absolutely love the fact that they retained him. And I think he can work wonders with Rodarius and Jaren Williams and hopefully get the most out of Robinson as well.
All right. A couple more before we got to say goodbye, because Nick does have to go, unfortunately. Bootney D, which offense will the Giants run, KC or Buffalo? I'm thinking it's going to be, it'll definitely be a mix, but I have a feeling it's going to have a heavy Buffalo flavor. Would you agree, Nick, given the personnel and the way they've kind of set things up based on, you know, the draft picks and whatnot?
I agree, but I also am curious to see how much of what Buffalo was doing was a product of Josh Allen, and Daniel Jones isn't Josh Allen, which could lead to a deviation of what we actually saw from spreading everything out in Buffalo and just trusting Josh Allen to make a play, which was a lot of what that offense was at a certain point. So I'm not really 100% certain on what we're going to see, and that's why I'm so fascinated by it.
Yeah, I am too. And, you know, we'll start to see, you know, I know a lot of people are going to ask about the offensive line. They're going to ask about this, that, and the other thing over the course of the spring. Folks, once the pads go on, that's when we can really tell what's going to be. Because right now there's going to be no hitting. There's going to be nothing run, full speed. I mean, heck, I'm hoping that the practices are held close to the patio where the media is perched, as opposed to all the way on the other end of the field where you need binoculars to watch what's going on. And then you miss some of the stuff because you've got binoculars on. But we'll keep you posted on that for sure. I mean, I'll be there and I'll be tweeting and I'll have reports and all that stuff for you. So I'll try and give you as best of a picture as I can. All right. Last question we'll take comes from Chris PH. Does Darnay Holmes make the roster? Nick, they do have a bunch of young guys. Again, you know, we debated who's going to be the outside cornerback. I think for the slot, though, I could see that being a committee. Could you?
Yeah, I think Flott and Holmes will probably man that down. Holmes, by all accounts, is an incredibly hard worker. Pound for pound, the dude flings his body around and makes some really, really impressive hits for somebody who isn't the biggest guy. He's good in zone. I feel like he's solid enough in man coverage. He gets a little bit grabby here and there. I think he can translate to play slot, and I think he ultimately will make the team. And I hope he does, because I've always been a Darnay Holmes fan. And I think if he didn't get injured last year, we would have saw better tape down the stretch of the season.
Yeah, I think there's going to be room for all of, you know, look, right now, I wouldn't cut any cornerbacks until we figure, you know, until they figure out who's going to be on the perimeter, who's going to be in the slot. Maybe some of these guys move inside to safety. I don't know. I mean, certainly that you can't rule anything out. I mean, all we have from the media perspective is the one practice, and we were allowed to film all the individual stuffs, but we couldn't really film or take pictures of the alignments and stuff. So we had to kind of do our best to describe what we were seeing in real time. And by the way, very fast tempo offense from what I could see. So it's going to be a bang, bang type of deal.
Love it. I can't wait to see it, to be honest. And this is a great start to this new regime with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. I feel like the ship is on the right path. Let's hope that's the case.
Yeah, indeed. All right, folks, unfortunately, Nick does have to dash. So, Nick, I want to thank you for coming on. This is great. Appreciate you. Folks, that means I'm going to end it as well, because I've got to go and I've got to get some writing done for Giants Country for tomorrow, including some stuff from Mr. Nick over there who submitted some wonderful stuff that I hope you will check out. We'll continue bringing you shows. I have a bunch of shows that I pre-tape with other draft experts that are coming on. I'm going to do a schedule show as well. I will have that, I think, tomorrow night. I will have a schedule show for you because schedule is coming out tomorrow. Happy schedule day, by the way. Who's excited about that? You excited, Nick?
I am excited. I want to see. I want to see too.
I want to see it. So we'll have a schedule reaction show. We'll have the mini camp report on Friday. And then I'll probably do another show over the weekend because mini camp is 2 days. So I'll try and bring you all the good stuff. And of course, you know, next live show we'll have Tana on if he's available, and we'll just keep cranking it out. So thank you everybody for tuning into tonight's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Nick, thank you again.
Always.
I will talk to you soon. Everybody, talk to you soon. Take care, everyone.